This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Stephanie Vanhover joins me live in studio. She is an associate professor of social studies education in the Department of Curriculum, Instruction, and Special Education at the Curry School of Education of the University of Virginia. She is the co-author of a recent article on the history and the development of Virginia's SOLs, Standards of Learning, 1995 to 2010. Stephanie, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me. So
let's talk about the SOLs, and I find it interesting that the first sentence of your article really says it. You say, what do school children need to learn, how do they learn best, and who should decide? It's the long-running debate, and it really does, it's a wonderful topic to explore this whole idea of the place of government in our lives. Is this, you know, big government controlling the schools, controlling teachers, or is this government to the rescue? Thank goodness government created these SOLs. So let's explore this topic. We'll bring the listeners in, of course, at 977-1070. But let's start at the beginning. What are the SOLs in Virginia, and where did they come from?
Office and wanted to revise them. And I'm speaking only about the history and social science standards. In 1995, they started the revision process by inviting school districts to bid on the opportunity to revise certain aspects of the standards. Newport News won the bid to re-examine the history and social science standards of learning. At the same time, Governor Allen named a commission for, I think it was called Educational Excellence, and they had a very clear vision of what they wanted in standards. Discipline-specific, jargon-free, and measurable, because they were going to be accompanied by tests to see what students learned each day. The problem was is there was a little bit of differing viewpoints between Newport News and the commission as to the direction of the standards. Historically, the social studies standards followed what was known as the expanding horizons approach in elementary, where you start studying self, your city, your community, your state, your nation, and then your world. And it was sort of interdisciplinary and reflected the definition of social studies as outlined by the National Council for the Social Studies. And the commission actually wanted a very sudden shift to very discipline specific. So history, geography, with a very set sort of spectrum of what needed to know. So these two groups were sort of working in opposition almost. And eventually a draft was created that reflected the commission's viewpoint.
So the change, the new idea.
The new idea, the change to very discipline-specific standards came from the commission, and the work done by the teachers, some say was incorporated, others say was ignored. There's a quote in the newspaper that we found saying it ended up looking like apples and oranges, but only one draft went out for public review. But we only looked at media reports and a dissertation that was done on the process, so we don't have direct interviews from anyone involved in the process, but it does seem as though the commission sort of took over the process of standards writing.
We're talking with Stephanie Vanhover of the University of Virginia. So the governor appoints a commission to rewrite these SOLs. The teachers are also working on it. And what the one we got was the governor's commission's version, not the teacher's version.
As far as we can tell, yes.
Okay. Do these things work? I mean, you know, looking back now, we've got, you know, over 10 years with these things, 15 years. Do they work? I mean, is there...
Depends how we define the word work. In history, that's a difficult question. So what do you mean by work?
Well, you tell me.
In history, as... I mean, you're an historian. So there's the knowledge of facts, which you absolutely need in order to understand history. But there's also being able to consider different perspectives, analyze accounts, what we call historical thinking skills in the field. They are included in the standards. However, they're not tested in the tests. So I think oftentimes we have to separate curriculum standards from tests. And the type of test does matter because it's going to influence the type of knowledge that is you try to capture from students.
Yeah. Now, this whole effort to on the part of Governor Allen to rewrite these standards of learning back in the 90s, politically speaking, this was a part of a real movement among conservatives at the time to sort of, they felt like, you know, schools were going downhill. We need to save the schools. This is the way we're going to do it. We're going to have more standards. We're going to, have them be discipline-specific instead of free-thinking and exploring and essay, and we're going to just say, you know, these are the facts you need to know.
Right, a return to sort of the essentialist philosophy versus progressive, and it was mostly in reaction to A Nation at Risk in 1983, where the report from the Reagan administration said a rising tide of mediocrity was taking over our schools, and so we needed to return to the basics.
Yeah. We're talking with Stephanie Van Hover of the University of Virginia's Curry School of Education. So what else did you learn about this whole process?
Well, we learned a lot. And like I said, we looked mostly at media reports, documents from the Virginia Department of Education, the standards documents, articles written about them, and dissertations. We learned in 1995 it was incredibly contentious and divisive. Some of the quotations that were cited in the newspaper from parent meetings and public meetings were fascinating, just railing against what was included, what was excluded, and you sort of see how contentious trying to codify our history is. And most of the criticism was in the history standards and the language arts English standards.
Not so much in the math and science.
Not so much math and science. And history really proved to be a lightning rod for criticism. Norley Frankel, who's a historian, she criticized them just saying they weren't good history and they needed to be written. So Walt Disney was considered a famous American that you needed to know in the elementary grades. Slavery wasn't mentioned in the standards. And so there were some sort of glaring errors. And the
These are in the standards by the Governor's Commission.
Yeah, the original draft, which was then sort of removed from public comment. They were revised, tightened up, made historically accurate, and then resubmitted again, and they were passed after considerable rewriting and redrafting. Then the problem becomes, like I said, you have to separate. There are the curriculum standards, and then there's the tests. So they came up with four-item multiple-choice fact recall tests to measure what students were learning in terms of the standards. And the first time the tests were given, the scores were abysmal. Something like 3% passed a certain test, and it became fabulous headlines. Students don't know history in Virginia. Because of that, because of a lot of reasons, the history standards were the first to be revised in 2001. And they would take the basic 1995 standards and they were making changes, trying to make it more historically accurate, cutting some of the jargon, changing some of the names.
Yeah. Has that proven, where are we now with the passage
of these? Third revision. So in 2001, it became another sort of media storm for two reasons. People sort of figured out that what's not in the standards isn't necessarily emphasized. So you see the emergence of special interest groups. So for example, an Armenian group wanted the inclusion of the Armenian genocide in the standards. Huge debate, big letter writing campaign, showed up at all the public hearings and became sort of a big contentious issue. If you look at the minutes of the board hearings over and over again, series of news articles written about it. And the Board of Education finally decided to list persecution of Armenians by Ottomans as one example of genocide in the 20th century. But it was included after.
So that activism paid off. They got
the
in the standards.
Yes, but not as much as they had wanted to. But it became interesting to see the special interest group suddenly realize certain museums would write in to make sure their particular historical figure was included at a certain time so that the field trips wouldn't be cut off. And so you sort of saw sort of more people, and people started arguing about names, and it sort of became trading cards, who's in and who's out. And it was another beautiful case study in how you can't please everybody. So Civil War, defenders of Civil War heritage were very offended when certain names were removed from kindergarten and moved to fourth grade, and some were moved entirely. Other groups were offended because another name was moved or deleted. And you sort of looked at, and so the newspapers took great joy in sort of who was in and who was out.
Yeah.
And that became the big focus of 2001 revisions. The standards were revised again in 2008, and this newsletter is actually based on an article we had published in an academic journal. And the title of that was called From a Roar to a Murmur, being that in 1995, this started with a huge roar. People couldn't agree on what was to be included or excluded, a very political process, very divisive. And in 2008, totally under the radar, we looked through all newspapers that may have covered it and couldn't find any media attention to the 2008 revisions. They just sort of was a strike through here, a change here, but very minor. We found the board minutes where everything was approved.
So what's the lesson there? I mean, it's enough time passed where Virginians don't really, they've come to accept this now.
Well, and we don't know, but my co-authors, we sort of sat around and discussed this. So what happened? And what we were thinking is a couple things. No Child Left Behind came in 2001 when history is not related to any of the major measurements in No Child Left Behind. It's sort of off to the side. And so history doesn't count for AYP or any of those important quote-unquote things.
Yeah.
Also, you know, we're sort of used to it. It's been a while. It's just part of your day-to-day life. And maybe we've sort of, I don't know if complacent is the right word, but it's just part of what we do. And the third thing is, again, related to No Child Left Behind, is those of us in history education have seen what's happened in states where history's not tested and there's not a great deal of attention to the curriculum and it just disappears. We have evidence in North Carolina and Florida that due to their testing and their curriculum standards, social studies is and history is disappearing from elementary grades just because no one's being held accountable to it.
We're talking with Stephanie Vanhoever of the University of Virginia's Curry School of Education. She's the co-author of a recent article, The Development of Virginia's History and Social Studies Standards of Learning. The phone lines are open. Let's bring the listeners in. 977-1070 is the phone number. Do you think the Virginia SOLs is big government, or is this government to the rescue? 977-1070. Your thoughts? The phone lines are open now at 977-1070. What are your thoughts about, because I'm sure you hear this all the time, this whole effort now on the part of largely conservative politicians to have these kind of standards in public schools has forced teachers or compelled teachers now to teach to those learning, to teach to the test, as they say, to teach to the standards. And if it's not in the standards, as you point out, research shows the stuff will disappear. They don't teach history in elementary school in North Carolina.
Right. Well, again, separating standards from the test. So we've always had standards, but you could take them or leave them because there wasn't an end of year test with a score that went next to your name that influenced your school's accreditation. And so I think that the tests have served, national research is showing, as an uncertain lever. So think about, what was your experience of history education when you were in secondary school?
I loved it. It was
what
fantastic.
What did the teacher do?
The thing I remember most was I took AP History.
Right.
In my junior year of high school, and it was mostly discussion. We had very little test. It was mostly discussion.
So you had a very different experience because most research shows, and there hasn't been enough, granted, but before any testing, history education, you ask people to raise their hands in a crowd, people without history degrees, and they remember it as dry, boring, fact-driven, worksheets, lecture,
names, dates,
passive,
yeah.
Names, dates. So some people say, well, what has changed? What has changed is now there's a test, so the teachers have to really focus the names and dates. But has anything else changed? Other really creative teachers initially may have found the test confining, but if they're really creative, good teachers, they figure out a way to work within the testing system. So again, uncertain lever. We're not sure in terms of research how much of an influence it plays because we're not sure what people would be doing anyway without the standards and the test. But we do know that there is great curricular alignment. People only teach often what is on the test. And there's often this notion that it's drill and kill, repetition, repetition, repetition. And sometimes that happens
in horrible ways. Spit it out on the test, then forget it.
Sometimes
it
happens incredibly creative ways. And that's where the uncertain lever is, because you can hand teachers whatever you want. But once they close the door in their classroom with their kids, they can make sense. They become what a colleague of mine calls curricular gatekeepers. They're the keepers of the gate. They get to decide what happened in their classroom. So research is mixed. If you asked a bunch of teachers, they would give you a lot richer anecdotal data.
Yeah. It's so. 22 minutes after 5 o'clock. We're talking with Stephanie Vanhoever of the University of Virginia's Curry School of Education. Let's go to the phones and bring the listeners in. Denise is in Charlottesville. Excuse me, Denise, go right ahead.
Did you want Denise or Ginny?
Go right ahead, caller. Go right ahead.
Okay. All right. I agree that the tests have improved substantially, but I have one thing that is a little bit different here. I run a company that does readability for textbooks and trade books for publishers, okay? And one of the complaints about the SOLs was that, yes, maybe the facts were asked and were, especially history, were correct, but the reading levels were not appropriate for the grades. And I was just wondering if anyone has completed these reading levels, if you know if they're appropriate for instance, especially the lower grades. Some of the words were not appropriate, and the children were unable to actually read the words, so they couldn't get the answer correctly.
Hey, let's let Stephanie have a crack at that.
I don't know of anyone offhand doing that. I have a colleague who is at Virginia Commonwealth University who does think alouds with students. So he sits down and has them look at a test question and think aloud as they're answering it. But he has only started that research. I do know we know that the readability of the tests is very difficult and that reading ability is usually the biggest indicator of how a student's going to perform on a standardized test. But I don't know specifics to the history.
Who writes these standardized tests? Do the politicians write them?
No, a company. So it used to be Harcourt Brace and now they've changed maybe to Pearson. But it's sort of a large company that if you look through the superintendent memos, they do a call for our request for proposals,
yeah,
and different large companies bid on who.
So what the caller
tests.
Points out, you've heard that complaint before, that these mm-hmm. tests that are coming in for our students are, you know, they can't read them.
In history, we know that the textbooks are difficult. You encounter an enormous number of new vocabulary words in a very small section, and the same can apply to the test. Readability is very important. If you can't read the test, you can't pass the test.
Phone lines are open, 977-1070. We're talking about the Virginia SOLs with Stephanie Vanhover of the University of Virginia's Curry School of Education, the co-author of a recent article about the history of the History and Social Studies SOLs. Is this big government or is this government to the rescue? Standards of learning in schools. Charles is on the line in Charlottesville. Go ahead, Chuck.
In the past, in other states I know, a failing SOL did not get a diploma from high school. Is that still in effect?
You have to have a certain number of what are called verified credits in order to graduate. So you have to pass, I think, and I would have to check the Department of Education online to make sure I'm correct, but you have to pass 3 history tests in order to graduate with a diploma.
So you can fail some of them.
You can fail some of them.
Yeah.
Some
still
SOLs
get your diploma
here and there, and you're going to get a different diploma based on the number of SOLs you pass.
Charles, what are your thoughts about SOLs?
Well, the reason I asked the question is the fact that I know there is a case in Massachusetts where a student did well on college boards, did well on grades, but did not pass the SOL, therefore did not get a diploma, could not go to college. And my concern in all of that is that I think college boards and grades should be sort of the golden rule, and that the SOL should not be a factor that would keep a child from going to college.
Well, I think test experts would agree with you. I think many of those of us in education, our issue is that it's a single measure of how a student does.
On that day, at that time.
On that day, at that time. And now that's starting to be tied to teacher evaluation. And I think the single measure is what we have issues with, that there need to be multiple ways of showing a student has learned and grown throughout the school year, and that this single measure is not the best way to assess what a student has or has not learned about U.S. history, world history, government, etc.
I could not agree more.
Charles, thank you for the call. Appreciate you joining the conversation. I think of this hierarchy in education that you move through, you know, data, information, what is it? Data, information, knowledge, understanding, and wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal is to take that human child and move them through that hierarchy, beginning with the basic data and collected as information. The more information you learn, the more knowledge you have. As you work with knowledge, you develop understanding. And then as you take this understanding and project it into, you know, hypothetical future situations, you really start to experience
mm-hmm.
wisdom. And it would seem that the standards of learning is really trying to make sure before you start going on forward in that hierarchy, you stop and take stock of where you are, but it also might have the effect of preventing somebody from moving forward in that hierarchy. You see what I'm getting at?
In history, yes. It sort of exists just in the fact recall realm. You're never moving on to sort of draw connections or compare, contrast, or write about history. You are just remembering factual content.
Yeah. So what do you think is that, before we let you go, what's the future of this? I mean, where are we now? We're not back in the 90s where, you know, conservatives every night are on the talk shows saying, save our schools, we need learning, standards of learning. I mean, they've moved on to other projects. But where are we now with this debate? And what might you expect from the future? I mean, this clearly does get votes on both sides of the aisle when we start talking about schools.
Yeah, well, Texas just proved that the debate continues where there's school board just recently revised their curricular standards, raised a host of controversy in Texas. It's even more significant because often textbooks gear their content because Texas is a huge market. So I think it's going to continue. And now there's talk of common standards at the national level. And anytime you put the words history and standards in the same sentence, there's going to be controversy because it's very hard to know what knowledge is of most worth and what are the most significant people, places, facts, events, skills, etc., for every child to know.
Stephanie Vanhoven is Associate Professor of Social Studies Education at the Curry School of Education, the University of Virginia. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.